Welcome to Disruptive Branding by Saffron Brand Consultants. In this podcast, we will share the most important insights that we have gathered from several decades of working closely with some of the world's most disruptive brands. We will show how every business, startup to enterprise, can design its brand using disruptive thought and action. From how-to sessions with members of our executive team to conversations with our clients, learn firsthand how to position your brand to compete with disruptive challenges and to challenge and disrupt yourself. So welcome to Saffron's ESG webinar. So this is all about how to use environmental, social and governance to connect with your audiences and build brand equity. So the whole point of this webinar, it's really a springboard from our ESG research report, which is called Creating Impact Where It Matters. And that can be downloaded on our website. So I'm Zara, I'm the marketing manager here at Saffron Brand Consultants. And today I'm joined by Patrick, who's the director and head of ESG at Ergon Capital, and Crosby, the chief partnerships officer at the Valuable 500. Very excited to have you both here. So thank you. Thank you for joining us. And do you want to give us a couple of, like a little quick intro? Crosby, do you want to maybe begin?
Sure. No, it's lovely to be here. Excited for this conversation, not only to be in discussion, but to learn. As Zara said, I'm the chief partnerships officer for the Valuable 500. Our team is responsible for all of the relationships with our 500 companies, which I know we'll explain more throughout the conversation, as well as the relationships we have in the global B2B service provider space from a global disability expertise lens. From an audio description purpose, I'm wearing a green sweater, which I think some of my colleagues in the UK would call a jumper today. And I have long red hair, skin that would always burn in the sun. And I'm coming to you from my Washington, D.C. apartment.
Thank you, Crosby. And Patrick.
Sure. Hello, Zara, and hello, Crosby. Thanks for inviting me to join. Basically, I'm calling you from Paris. And my job is to be an investor at a private equity fund, which is called Ergon Capital. And what we do is that basically we acquire small and medium-sized companies, which we try to accelerate the growth during our investment period. And we have to date more or less throughout Europe 20 different companies. And in addition to that job of being an investor, I'm basically, as you said, Zara, head of corporate social responsibility and ESG. And that's potentially the aspect of my role, which is the most important today. And through that role, what I do is that I'm responsible for the ESG development within our offices throughout Europe and within our 20 more or less portfolio companies.
Amazing. Well, I think it's been great to get your perspectives today. So let's dive into a few questions. So my first question is that ESG is on the agenda of most brands right now. But I think, you know, it stands at the moment for, you know, environmental, social and governance. But what does that really mean? And why is it really important for each of your brands?
Yeah, let me, for those who may not know, let me give context to who the Valuable 500 is, first of all. So we are a historic global movement of 500 companies and their CEOs, founded by Caroline Casey, who've come on board to say that they care about, they're committed, they're ready to advance disability inclusion across their value chain. So that's how we enter this conversation and this work, is it's companies looking at where disability lives in all aspects, everything from employee base to customer and how they're thinking about product innovation to procurement and how they're bringing entrepreneurs on. So, I mean, Zara, I think we enter this conversation with a specific lens, knowing that companies are starting to get smarter, better, faster at this conversation because they know at the end of the day, it matters to their people, their employees, and the happiness and well-being inside the house, as well as to the profits that are coming in from the way that they're innovating around products and the thinking they're doing from the beginning to the end of the value chain. So that's where we start.
What I would say on my side is that indeed, I mean, ESG is today on top of our agenda, not only at my company Ergon, but also at all the 20 portfolio companies which we have. It's at the top of the agenda because from an internal standpoint, that's, I tend to think today, the way to attract and to retain the best talent. I mean, if you want to have great people working for you, you need to show that from an E, S, and G standpoint, you are basically at the top. Otherwise, you just don't get the key people. And that's also important externally. That's the way we see it, with regards, obviously, to our clients, but also with regards to our suppliers, who, you know, expects from us that we are on top of these topics. And what I would add to that is that, you know, there are different entities who could potentially impact the E, S, and G. One is government, but, you know, as we know, it's not always easy for governments to, you know, align their interests and to have a real impact. Then you have basically individuals, all of us, but obviously we individually are quite isolated to make a real impact. So when you think about it, and in my view, one of the best medium to impact environment, social and governments in general, that's definitely the companies, you know, where there are a group of people who have aligned interests and can really, you know, do things concretely and pragmatically on these topics.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you're saying about people, because so ESG, like obviously it's very important, as you said, to attract talent, to keep talent and to keep all your audience engaged. But it seems like, I mean, when we look at like your role, for example, Patrick, do you, like, that role wouldn't have existed like, you know, 100 years ago. So why, and even like, I would say like 5 years ago, we weren't really having the same conversations. I feel like ESG has really come onto the radar recently. And it's amazing now people are taking notice and people, all brands are, you know, it is, as you said, on the top of the agenda. And why is that? Why is it recently that we have finally, you know, come to light and we're finally addressing these issues head on?
I agree. I mean, 2 years ago, the ESG was not at that position on top of the agenda. That's clear. We and our planet are really fragile. And I tend to think that COVID on one end and the troubles on climate, the climate issues were the key factors of that acceleration of ESG principle. That's my analysis.
No, I mean, I tend to agree. We keep talking in our space about how COVID in some ways was the great unifier in tossing everything up into the air and in showing that we could work remotely, we could work flexibly, we could change things faster at a higher rate of pace than what we admitted to prior. But it also was, it showed great inequities around the world, especially from a healthcare, a job inequity standpoint. I mean, it really has shown and brought light to issues that matter. But I mean, I think if we go back to your question, there's several kind of stakes in the ground that we're seeing change. So if you look at 2019 and the CEO Business Roundtable putting out their statement on what it meant to be a corporation, I think if you look at the rise of the B Corp movement and what they're putting out of companies like Patagonia, who are firmly standing behind who they say they are, both from a business and an ESG perspective, and still doing extremely well in profits, let alone like the Salesforces of the world. I mean, I think you're seeing it come into play at a higher level because companies are understanding the profit that lives behind it, as well as what it can do for their brand, as well as what it can do for their people.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And in both of your experiences you both had quite broad experiences working at very big corporations. And, you know, Cosme, for example, I saw that you've also, when you joined Walmart, you know, you're working, doing creating an external disability platform there. And I wonder, like, what it's like implementing an ESG agenda or an ESG project within a massive corporation. And then I guess you're looking at 500 different valuable 500 companies. How, like, what's the biggest challenge that you've seen and when we're kind of implementing an agenda like this?
It's a good question. Let me start first, I think, with the possibility before the challenge, because I think why I believe in business so much, I mean, our companies are 500 companies, why I know that they can actually change and move the needle around disability inclusion, which is why I get up in the morning, because it is my passion, is because of what I saw, you know, in my 7.5 years at Walmart and then working with companies on the outside. You know, I worked at the very heart of the best intentions of the company. When you do this kind of work and you see what companies are trying to drive forward from an ESG perspective, from a philanthropic perspective, how they're trying to take care of their people. And I feel like corporations like a Walmart or, you know, any of the ones that we have in the 500 have such an ability, to a point that Patrick made earlier, to move at a rapid pace of size and scale in a way that governments don't have the capability to do. Business truly can change the landscape because of the power they have to move quickly. I think the challenges are exactly that same size, right? Like, you are turning the Titanic and trying to create some of these changes. So it really becomes about, one, again, that's why Valuable 500 is a CEO-led movement, because this work had been moving too slow for too long, because the highest levels of leadership had not been at the helm of this conversation. And when CEOs are at the table and when board and governance understands these issues, things move faster. But then it becomes about really strong filtration throughout the companies, strong connectivity, all of the stakeholders coming to the table and understanding their many plays and many pieces and the ways that on a daily basis they can move this work forward. Where we've also seen some really interesting examples of that's exactly where things have failed, when the right stakeholders haven't been at the table to have the conversations internally within companies.
I think that what you said, Cosby, make a lot of sense, and I fully agree with what you said. In my view also, I mean, what is key when we discuss about ESG is, and that's to your question, Zara, on the biggest challenge, is the approach. In my view, the way to be successful is based on two things. One is that the approach has to be positive. I mean, ESG at some point was about risks, was about constraints, was about compliance, was about, you know, painful things to do. And what I think is that ESG is exactly the contrary. ESG is about, you know, opportunities, is about positive things. And it's key that people can feel that, you know, it's a positive movement and not something we are constrained to do. And by the way, from a company standpoint, ESG to me, and that's what we were saying before, but it's a way to retain and attract talents. So that's definitely positive. That's a way to, you know, differentiate compared to competition, which is definitely also something positive. That's a way to, you know, reduce waste and therefore cost, which is also something positive. So first of all, having a positive approach, to me, that's key. And then the second thing, which I tend to believe is important, and here we are talking pragmatically, I mean, which is important, is about being, you know, progressive and pragmatic.
You know, it's interesting, Zara, and we can add, I mean, let's just keep going on the P's here. Add one more to that, which could be because this is so personal, right? So it really is about how I enter the world, what my values are, why I choose a brand. And I can feel that same way as an employee, as a shareholder. It's why I choose to align myself. And I think you can do that through storytelling with all of the things that Patrick was talking about being pragmatic and positive. I mean, it's the same way that we do talk about disability, that disability is incredibly personal. It could be your own story or your attachment through a family member or a loved one, whoever that might be. But I think it's that linkage to brands by understanding the ethos and the values that align to your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we at Saffron, you know, obviously we're a brand consultancy, and we see kind of brand as that sort of North Star that kind of makes all your ESG kind of initiatives, the agenda, the principles all come together and feel kind of authentic and feel like it's your brand ESG agenda, not just, you know, doing something because we have to tick the ESG box. And so I guess, how would you, if a brand is, you know, starting to think about, okay, we need to get our ESG principles in order, we need to start working out what we stand for and what ESG practices we should put in place, what kind of advice would you give them? Where should a brand begin, really?
So for me, I have a huge bias in culture. I have a huge bias around if it's not authentic internally and you're setting yourself up for failure. I mean, you know, Netflix is going through some things right now because they didn't, you know, look internally at their culture and speak to their employees. So I think when you look at your ESGs, I think there's work to do in-house to make sure that those messages are clear, adopted and understood by all before you go out into the world with what your platform is going to be. I'll start there.
I fully agree with your point about you know, doing the work in-house. To me, I mean, how do we develop an authentic and relevant ESG agenda? To me, the key is to embark people and to embark people locally. The approach that we are taking at the level of our private equity fund and at the level of all our 20 portfolio companies is to try, you know, to work first on identifying for a specific company what is his mission, what is his identity, what are its values. And how do we do that? We do that typically by, you know, conducting a survey with all the employees to try to understand what are their feedbacks and you know, and their proposition. So I'm talking about all the employees at the company, and then conducting to the extent possible additional workshops with a few people from the top management, so that basically we manage to get a view on, at the level of the broad company, what are the key values, what's the identity, what's the mission. And then based on that, what we do is that we typically, you know, try to draft some kind of, you know, ESG principle or ESG policy, and we will typically be helped by somebody like you, Safwan, to try to, you know, put that in the appropriate communication way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess when it comes to your metrics, I'm really intrigued by this. How do you measure? What kind of KPIs should we be looking for when it comes to ESG kind of initiatives?
Patrick, I'll let you go first on this one.
Sure. Well, there are a number of KPIs which we are looking at. If I'm just highlighting the top KPIs in my view, I would say on the environmental standpoint, it's definitely the carbon footprint. You know, to me, a company cannot say that it has, you know, an ambition in terms of environment if the company is not able to tell you, this is my carbon footprint. I mean, to me, when presenting itself, a company should say, this is what we are doing. These are basically ourselves. These are our number of companies, and this is our carbon impact. That's part of, you know, the key things in when presenting a company in my view. So one KPI would be, what's the carbon impact of a company? And by the way, that's the first step to be able to decrease the carbon impact. Then from a social standpoint, I would tend to think, you know, one of the important one potentially that could be the disability, obviously, but that could be more generally diversity, you know, and there are, you know, a few KPIs we could think about with regards to how that, to what extent is that company diverse or not from different standpoints. And then, you know, from a governance standpoint.
Yeah, and Zahar, Patrick really covered it, but just to add, I think it's also about the reporting parameters that companies put into place. Like, okay, so you've put your ESG platform, you've put your goals out into the world. How are you also reporting on your success or your gaps or your failures in that? And I think the people part of what you attach to your planet ESG goals are as important. So not only what are you doing from a philanthropic perspective, so putting, you know, your company's dollars out into the world, but how are you taking care of your own people, to Patrick's points of, you know, diversity initiatives, but where are you looking at well-being? I mean, if anything came out of COVID en masse, is that well-being really matters to the state of an employee base. So, you know, it needs to be a part of what we're examining as we go forward.
Exactly. And maybe just to add on that point, Crosby, but obviously what is key before communicating, as you just said, is, you know, to implement initiatives. And it could be a big threat for companies who are tempted to communicate before having developed companies. And we have seen, especially in France, you know, some startups communicating on great ESG principles, But then, you know, some articles in the press with employees saying that the social climate was extremely poor at the company. And a startup which was extremely successful, just with one press article, just got bankrupt. So obviously, you know, before thinking about communicating and what we want to put forward publicly, the key, as we say, is, you know, making sure that we are internally doing the right things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about, you know, walking the talk, not just, you know, not just the chat about it. It's actually, what are you doing? But I guess it's difficult to decide what activations you should do. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's so many things that you can do. But how does a brand, you know, we always talk at Saffron about, always being like authentic, relevant, and differentiated. And I think when we're looking at ESG principles and ESG activations, there are so many things you can do to for the environment. There are so many things that you can do, you know, for diversity. But how do you kind of set a criteria of the things, right? These are the things this year we're going to try and achieve. How do you kind of go about that? How do you make those decisions?
I mean, I think first of all, it has to align to your business objectives and your priorities. It has to be authentic to your brand and who you are as a company. If it's not aligned, then there's a mismatch and it's easy to pull out and separate. You know, if you think about one of our companies, Santen, based in Japan, who focuses on ocular health, all of their ESGs or their primary number of ESGs are directly aligned to what they do as a business around ocular health. So the philanthropic dollars they put out into the world, the way they think about their people, the way they think about their carbon footprint, all ties back to exactly the products that they're producing on a daily basis. And I think that that's the beginning point.
Before, it has also to come from the employees, you know, to get to that authenticity. And then I have to think, you know, I tend to think that there are a few basics that every company, whatever it is, should be clear on. One, again, is definitely carbon footprint. That's whatever the sector, whatever the size, you know, all companies should have performed a carbon footprint to be able to say, to date, I mean, on an annual basis, this is, you know, the carbon impact which we have. Then every company, you know, should be able to say and claim that the social climate internally is good, if not great. That's also, to me, a basic, whatever the company, whatever the industry, whatever the size. And then, you know, every company should have kind of an ESG policy. So I mean, a few key principles written on paper and officially published. To me, these are the basics, whatever the company is. And then in addition to that, and as Crosby said, you know, a few additional things specific for each company.
And I think, sorry, something has to be said. And this is a little bit rogue of the conversation, but for companies to be able to create an appetite and space to go big and to try and potentially fail. I mean, you know, there's American automakers that have put out some big goals, GMC and some others, around when they're going to be all electric, especially their trucks. We'll see, you know, we'll see what happens, but they're putting out really large goals. And I think not enough companies allow themselves that ability to try, right? So I think too many, when it comes to ESGs, when it comes to diversity platforms, too often the goals are safe. Too often the goals are small. So how do we get to the big? How do we get to the, you know, how do we get to a place where it's okay to risk?
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree on that one. There is some kind of urgency, as we said before, and COVID showed it, the climate change showed it. And as you said, and as I suppose we said, companies need to think big.
And I guess it's, you know, those companies who are thinking big that change the landscape, change different sectors. It's, you know, setting the bar for the sector so that everyone then has to kind of, you know, aim at that level. So you were talking a little bit about the like principles, coming up with some sort of ESG principles. But then how would you communicate those? One of the things we focus on in our research was kind of the channels where brands can kind of express their ESG commitments. So we found that one that was like very, like the thing that kept coming up was social media. keeps coming up. You know, it's a place where everyone, you know, seems to get most of their information about a brand's ESG principles. But we also had, for the UK specifically, word of mouth was really big. And then we had sort of like TV, podcast, radio was also really important. So I was wondering, in your experience, which touch points do you find you can kind of get across the ESG commitments kind of?
To me, that's more a question geared to you, Zara and Saffron, because, you know, I have to be honest, with regards to communication, we will just, you know, trust you guys to help us making the right choice. It's clear that, you know, from my standpoint, social media, and I have to say more specifically LinkedIn, are the good way to communicate. But some messages are transmitted better by the word of mouth. So I would do a kind of mix between the different channels. But I would definitely revert to you on that one, Zara.
Well, I have to say, from our perspective, having done, you know, this research, this big survey, kind of across Gen Z specifically, we have found, that social media is really the leading way. And it's interesting. What I found very interesting about this research was that we did a study that was across China, US, and the UK to kind of get a really broad spectrum of Gen Z answers. And we did find that, for example, the Chinese consumer seems to be really valuing the ESG agenda a lot more than we kind of anticipated. And I think it was interesting seeing the difference between the regions, between like seeing, you know, okay, this actually, they value, you know, social media more as a channel, or another one values word of mouth more. Do you find that there is like a really, that the importance of ESG agenda is like that changes across regions, across ages, when you're looking at different companies? Is everyone kind of having the same conversation, or do you find that it's like a very, very different still?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's so nuanced. It's nuanced by generation. It's nuanced by culture. It's nuanced by geography. I mean, what will work in, and you even saw it, and I hope that folks have been able to see the study, or it's coming out soon. It really is a great piece. It changes even by, if you're a Gen Z in the US or you're Gen Z or millennial in the UK. But I mean, we're seeing these conversations move really quickly. For example, you know, we talked about the positive of what can happen with social media and how that can affect your brand. And we do see a large pickup there. But if you think back to, you know, the summer of 2020 and the death of George Floyd and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, especially what we saw in the States, many companies were canceled. There was anger on social media by the way companies either handled it or didn't handle it, responded or didn't respond. So back to what Patrick was saying, that you need to listen to your employees, that you need to come out with authentic messages. I think if you're going to put these things out on social media, you need to understand the risks and the rewards again, and be authentic with who the consumer base is that you've built. If I care about your brand and you've spoken to me in a certain way, and then there's a major issue that you flub up, we need to have an honest conversation as a consumer to a company now. And I think that's how a part of this world has changed with ESGs and the rise, is that it's become really personal to me. And so and I saw myself, even though I'm surely not a Gen Z, reflected in your study, where the conversation becomes between the consumer and the company. Again, back to storytelling and making this whole thing feel very personal.
Yeah, I fully agree. I would tend to say that indeed, authenticity relates to the culture, and therefore, you know, there are differences between one culture and another, so between one part of the world and another part of the world. But it's differences with regards to the approach. But on the fact that, you know, ESG is an important topic, I would tend to think that's now something which we all share globally, which is definitely great. And then I would also add that, as you just said, Crosby, it's now a question of the young generation and especially the Gen Z pushing on these topics more than the previous generation. And I think that's obviously key, that, you know, these guys and I'm not part of these guys, but these guys, you know, push and continue to push because they are the one who can make changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about, you know, the future, a bit of like prediction, before we kind of go into audience questions. So everyone get your questions in. We'll after this question, we'll go to the audience. But I'm kind of interested to know what trends you guys have seen like in the past few years when it comes to ESG and kind of what you see coming up on the horizon.
You know, from my work, I can't speak to the E as well as the other sides of the house. But for us, what we're seeing really truly is a rise in commitment around diversity and the ways that it matters across the business, right? Some of that, again, goes back to George Floyd and what happened. 2020 was both, the pandemic and a huge global conversation about Black Lives Matter that has affected diversity in total in interesting ways and the ways that the companies are stepping forward. And for the first time in my 20 years in this space, I feel like we are starting to get more nuanced about the intersectionality of all of this. We're starting to get more nuanced that a company doesn't have to focus on one thing at a time when it comes to diversity, so that it can be race and gender and disability and how all of this impacts across the board.
Yeah, I agree. And on my side, when, you know, thinking about the future, I would tend to think that, you know, ESG will continue to take an exponentially importance. That's not just an acceleration, that's something exponential.
And the last thing, Zara, that I should have said is, you know, I'm excited for when companies get even more competitive in this space. And I think we're starting to see it. And when you look at companies that have had great shareholder return over the last year, whether that's Salesforce or Adobe or Microsoft, that are also doing well in the ESG space, and you can show the alignment between this work and profit and where your shareholders are, and none of that is misaligned, that's the game changer in the conversation, right? Because at the end of the day, business is business as well. And so when we can prove to even the folks that are the slow adopters to why ESG matters, they're not the Patagonias of the world. It's that your company can be all of these things and be profitable.
Fully agree, and maybe to complete on that one, but to me, ESG, putting ESG on the agenda is not just about, you know, willing to have a positive impact on the world. It's about, you know, thinking that indeed ESG creates value and has a positive impact, even financially on companies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that could help with people who are not convinced about, you know, trying to make a better world, just by, you know, proving them that just by doing ESG, they would also have a better performance for their companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you gave a couple of examples, Crosby, of companies like Salesforce. And I wonder who would you, if you had to give like a few companies that, you know, our audience, if they're looking to like see companies that are really like using ESG agenda well, what sort of, yeah, what companies should we be kind of looking at as best practice?
Part of me is coming to this through a disability lens. So, you know, and we're happy to follow up with a series of our companies too, but Barclays is doing fascinating work internally around their employees, Microsoft across the board, whether it's product innovation, what they're trying to do internally for their employees. Logitech is another company that's doing really interesting work. I mentioned Santon earlier, that's a smaller company, but nimble and flexible and putting some really interesting things into play. So a handful of companies, and I've missed so many that are doing, you know, fascinating work.
And obviously, Crosby mentioned, you know, large, very large companies, but to me, there's also a set of, you know, startups doing, you know, fantastic things with regards to ESG. So to me, it's not about large companies, but it's about all companies and, you know, working together in the same direction.
It's such a good point. And I'm such a believer in the B Corp movement and what they're doing in total. And those are, many of those are single shop owned companies or, you know, companies on the rise as far as revenue numbers and number of employees.
And I'm curious, Patrick, when you're investing in companies, you know, be it a small or a larger one, does the ESG kind of their ESG principles, their ESG agenda make it, I assume it makes like a big impact in your decision as to whether to buy them, to get involved with them, or?
There are two ways to look at the company. You could think, well, we will just invest in companies which are great in terms of ESG, which is one way to look at things. Or we could, you know, say, if that company is not good in terms of ESG, by investing into that company and by doing the right things, we will put it on the right track. So, you know, we can have, you know, both ways at Aragon with regards to the way to look at that. But, you know, in any case, what we try to do is, to the extent possible, to support each of our portfolio companies on their basically ESG development.
Super interesting. Okay, so I think we're going to go to questions. I've got one question here, which is about a brand's responsibility. Is there a brand's responsibility to educate its audience around ESG?
In my view, at least, we can definitely make changes. It's not governments, because it's difficult to align interests. It's not individuals, because being isolated is tough. So it's really at the corporate and at the company level. So, you know, companies, brand in general, definitely have a responsibility with regards to ESG.
And then Zahara, I would add that a company can't take on full responsibility for educating their consumer around everything. But what I feel like a brand can do, a company can do, is take responsibility for educating me about why you care. So I'm your consumer. Why is this important to you? Then it's, you know, beholden on me to take the ownership, to understand it myself, to continue to align myself with your brand or not. I mean, we're seeing our companies do that around a disability perspective, and the way that they are putting it out into their media or not, and the way that those images are changing around disability. And I think that that's where the education comes in, is explaining to me why it's important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And another question is just about advice for kind of really early stage companies. So early stage, be it like a startup, a kind of, you know, a one man shop around the corner. Where can they kind of start thinking about ESG and making an impact?
Again, to identifying what are the values, what's the objective and the goal of our company, and to try to have all the people working at the company aligned around that. And I think that, to me, that's really, you know, the starting point of everything. Because if you don't have people at the company aligned on the values and on the mission, then you're just not authentic, and you're not just credible, and you just can't build any ESG agenda.
Yeah. No, I would agree totally. And it's going to sound simple, but before I was with the Valuable 500, I was a part of a company that I started with two co-founders. So this question is actually really personal to me too. And we did exactly what Patrick was talking about. We sat still in a room for a week, the three partners, deciding what the personality of our company was going to be. Who were we exactly as a personality, and who were we not? I think deciding who you're not at the beginning is as important as deciding who you are and what your values are, and moving forward from that, and ensuring that it is adopted by all. I think it's also back to the thing that we all use and have heard in business forever. It's those SMART rules, making sure that the goals that you put into place are actually attainable, that they're relevant to you, that there's a timeline to them, that you have KPIs attached, and that you know that you're successful or not. And if you're not as a startup, then you can pivot and find your right place in this. You're going to have failures. You're going to have gaps. You're going to have lessons. It doesn't mean leave ESG by the wayside. It means find the right lane of ESG for your company.
That's really interesting. And also what you were saying about failures, I guess it's one thing to fail on like a, you know, when you're a startup and you have a smaller audience, but I guess because we work with some of the, you know, the world's biggest corporations, and how, I mean, it must be as like a, you know, a big corporation with a lot of eyes on you. I know you were saying earlier is, you know, we all have to kind of take risks, be a bit brave. I mean, how would you kind of advise the, what do you kind of advise these big corporations to do when it's, if they make a mistake, if they fail, how do they kind of pull themselves back from that?
I mean, it's hard. It depends on, yeah, it's hard. It depends on what the failure is, right? So, but transparency is key. You know, it was interesting. One of my lessons that I did see while I was at Walmart was being under a leader who announced large things publicly and then let the company move towards that work and set big goals. I mean, I love attorneys. I was raised by two of them. And I know that sometimes the risk on the inside can be the thing that keeps or holds those big goals back. But I think we have to allow companies to try to stretch, right? To set their own version of SDGs by 2030. So what does that look like from a corporate perspective? We're starting to see, it's interesting, we're starting to see a greater appetite for it, but where there's a greater appetite, it aligns with the company's culture and personality. So where there's a company culture and personality of risk, of wanting to go big or go home for certain ways, they're more likely to set those kind of agendas. Where it's a company, where it's a safer play, you see a more slow and steady march. Both are forward progress, but we need the mix of both to really move this needle forward.
What I would add to what Crosby said is that fully agreed transparency is key, and also intention is key. I mean, if the intention is positive, you know, your failure will never be an issue. Your customers will still continue to buy your brand. Your suppliers will still continue to work with you. And you know, that will not be an issue. If the intention is at the beginning not positive, then failure may be a big issue for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have another question from our audience, from Wendy, who says, how can we make the disability inclusion community the most welcoming, not only to people with disabilities, but to the entire world? So that's very much targeted at you, Crosby.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you mean from the disability side or from the company side. I mean, I think if it's from the company side, let me start there. It's making sure that if you are wanting outreach to the disability community, whether it is from a hiring standpoint or a product standpoint or a procurement standpoint, that your internal leaders understand disability and have a comfortability with the conversation. So it's about education, awareness. It's knowing where you enter the conversation and how to ask the right questions. I think if it's coming from the disability side, I'm business and disability, but I've been on the nonprofit and the social services side, the activist side as well. It's that side, understanding the language of business in a way that we haven't led with. It's part of why there's been a misalignment between disability and global business. It's part of why the Valuable 500 needs to exist to align those two conversations at a higher level and at a better rate. But from a company standpoint, is disability represented in your marketing materials? Is it representative in your CEO talking points or your leadership talking points? Can I see it in your policies and practices? Even if you think about well-being or accommodations, where does it live and how does it appear? I think that's where you have to start the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one other question is about, I think this is what you mean, Wendy, but how do we enhance this kind of shift towards the like inclusion revolution? What can we all do to kind of, and I think we can take that for a kind of wider than just inclusivity, but on like an ESG kind of agenda in general, what can we kind of do to get each one of us sort of involved in the movement? And because at the end of the day, yes, we need businesses to be kind of making this transition, but businesses are made up of people. So how can we kind of inspire people and kind of get people, you know, to get into this revolution that we're seeing?
I mean, part of it, again, I've repeated myself on one point that it has to be personal, right? But you have to use your voice. I think it's really important, especially in leadership positions, to put these pieces into place with your teams. But a part of it, Zara, kind of on a more macro level, is that we need better data. We need better reporting. We need better transparency. If our companies are playing in the space and doing it well, and they know what their internal employee numbers are, we need companies getting more comfortable with putting that out into the world so that we can have a conversation. We know that the global statistics we're using around disability, when we say 15% of the world population, is a 10-year-old stat that's woefully behind. We say that there's $8 trillion in disposable income in the global disability community. That stat is almost 10 years behind. So where companies can really come to play with this and more power is to put the data out into the world. And that's what we're trying to do with our 500 companies, really using this as a collective, a convener, and an incubator as we learn over the course of the next 3 years.
I fully agree. On the corporate level, what is key is, as you said, getting better data so that basically companies can prove based on specific KPIs that they are progressing from 1 year to another. And you know, we need to have indeed data and KPIs to prove that, you know, a company is progressing. And at the more individual level, I think it's about, you know, sensibilizing people. And it's also about, you know, advising people to start from their own. You know, it's not just about, you know, motivating managers to put in place carbon assessments at their companies, but it's also about at our individual homes sorting waste. You know, doing all these little things that will, you know, contribute by accumulating all of us to have an impact.
Yeah. And so I think we have to come back to, we've continued to reiterate, listen to your people, make sure that it aligns with your business, and come back to the point that we started at the beginning, that it has to be leadership led. So too often with things like this, whether it's diversity platforms or environmental social platforms, it has to be led by your employee base or by the people who are trying to change the world, instead of being led by the leaders of the companies. And it's why the CEO conversation is so critical. It's why having these ESG conversations inside boardrooms is so critical, knowing that it's top down as well as grassroots up.
Thank you so much for connecting you guys. It was really, really interesting to get your perspective on everything.
Thank you, everyone. Patrick, nice to speak with you. And Zara, if I didn't answer Wendy's questions or anyone's question, I'm happy to have my info shared with folks. I want to make sure to be able to follow up.
Amazing.
Same for me, definitely. Thank you, Crosby. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thanks all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Disruptive Branding. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and do leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps other brand lovers to find us.